I was meaning more of like a physical description.
Oh. Okay. No.
I know that I'm deep inside, nothing more but a bunch of zeros.
Welcome to episode one of Bards and Nobles, season two.
Yay!
Woo! Get excited, guys.
I'm excited.
All right, I'm Brian, the Dungeon Master, and today I'm joined by...
Anthony Boyd.
Trey O'Neill.
Andrew Danan.
Aaron Williams.
Blake Harrison.
Charles Nelson.
And today's episode is brought to you by Audible.com. If you want to, you can go to www.audibletrial.com/bards and register, and you'll get a 30-day free trial and a free book to check it out. And the book that I would recommend downloading is Foundation by Isaac Asimov. It's a story about a guy who uses science to predict the future, and he determines that the government is going to collapse. And so he convinces the emperor and manages to basically use his ability to predict the future to plan out the next 3,000 years of the government. And it's basically how he takes over, and it's a really cool story. So recommend it. Check it out. And again, that is www.audibletrial.com/bards to get a free audiobook. All right, and we're ready.
All right, and like I said, this is season two, because if you've been listening, you know what happened last time at the end. Everyone kind of, well, no spoilers. If you don't know what happened, I'd recommend going back and listening to the first season. But we've got a new game. Everyone's playing new characters, and we're in a new world. So... Let's get in there. You guys ready?
Give us the deets, man.
I'm so ready.
All right. Welcome to the fantasy world of Birav, home to all types of sentient creatures, magics, monsters, of all shapes and sizes. Throughout the day, two twin stars, a yellow and a white one, coast along through the skies and cause it to change through a myriad of different colors. At night, a shattered blue tinted moon sits in the sky, against a backdrop of millions of stars of different colors, and shooting stars. Just the night sky is as beautiful and as fantastical as you can imagine. For as long as anyone remembers in the world of Birav, during the night, strange and horrific creatures manifest and just roam the land until, of course, in the morning, the light drives them out again. Because of this, civilizations have formed in well-lit and well-defended cities throughout this landscape. Our story is going to take place in the Kingdom of Orym, which itself is host to a number of different cultures, religions, myths, and peoples. Orym is ruled by Kaviel, also known as the Sun King. Although there are multiple cultures and, for the most part, self-governing bodies within Orym itself, all those within the kingdom share a fierce loyalty to this king. Because he protects them from greater evils that live beyond the kingdom's borders. We'll be opening up in the city of Sedleo, which is the kingdom's capital, also known as the Pillar of Light. Sedleo acts as a cultural center of both magic and technology. New advancements are made regularly, but the world still maintains that fantasy flavor. Let's see. It's called the Pillar of Light because at all times, even at night, its light can be seen piercing the skies for miles and miles, so that the city stays protected from the monsters that seem to appear at night. Today, Sedleo's streets are filled with people and celebration. Lots of cheering, lots of families, lots of fireworks and streamers. There's just everyone's having a good time. It's a holiday known as the Day of the Dawn, and it's celebrated on the summer solstice once every 20 years. On this day, the heroes known as the Dawnguard Knights are celebrated as they retire after years of service to the crown, and new heroes are chosen. Adventurers, champions, and those with a particular renown are all invited to the capital by the king himself, as he appoints new champions to defend the realm from whatever evils may arise. Children run around in masks playing games of gacha and tag, as some are dressed in various monster costumes, while others are dressed like warriors of light, you know, chasing them through the streets. And this is where we will start. Outside the main citadel, it's almost a walled-in mini city inside the city where the king stays. There are a line of people and two lines of people along a street forming around almost a parade of heroes, much like yourselves. And they kind of just wait for people to come through with their invitations to catch a glimpse of who might be named the newest Dawnguard Knights. At the very front, the gates closed. The two Imperial Guardsmen stand there, one a Warforged, the other a Goliath, both wielding giant pikes. The doors, massive and golden, and just silver and white with these geometric patterns all over them, begin to open as light pours through. And as soon as they begin to move, everyone just loses their minds and goes nuts and cheers.
And there's a turkey.
at the very front of the line of these heroes waiting to enter stands a single Warforged. Andrew, you want to describe your character?
I will do so. So, like I said, I'm Andrew Dangan. I will be playing the Warforged soldier, Elon Musket. So, a little bit of backstory.
Incredible.
And also, I mean, I've got a nickname. My nickname is Relic, in case you guys don't want to go by the full name. That's cool. So, a little bit about me. Elon was born and raised in a town called Goblas. It's over on the western side of the kingdom near the Arid Peaks. He grew up tinkering. He always wanted to, you know, take stuff apart, put stuff together. And, you know, he's really absorbed into tinkering and building things. So he started learning the ways of the artificer. And, you know, at age 19, he created his first magical item, which was a bag of holding, which he has to him, you know, has with him to this day. You know, the next great invention that he was really pumped up about was his helm of comprehend languages. But the invention of that comprehend languages allowed him to listen to the town's worries, because the town is made up of like a bunch of different people. They all speak their own languages typically and in their own little group. So he didn't really know what was going on. And he found out, that's when he learned about all the demons that come out at night and the, you know, the enemies that are, you know, past the western border in the Arid Peaks. So he decided that that he needed to do something to kind of help the town, because currently the only defense the town had was through the adventurers that just happened to be stopped by in the town on their way to go fight in the Arid Peak region. So he formed a militia, and he was with the militia, organized it, and they were very successful. And he was with the militia until he was about 50, which is when he earned the nickname Relic, because he was the oldest guy in the militia. But he, you know, he was getting kind of too old, and the militia was doing very well. So he retired to go back to his tinkering. And about 2 years after he retired, the town was attacked by raiders from the west, past the western kind of border of the kingdom. And they were, you know, more prepared and more and better equipped than they had ever been before. So he decided to use his artificer skills. He became a gunsmith, and he started equipping the militia with arms and, you know, to help defend the town better, which led him to coming up with the idea of building a Warforge to protect the town. So on that, you know, note, he kind of like started experimenting, and he created his first construct, which was an Allosaurus named Nibbles. So Nibbles is 8 feet tall and weighs 550 pounds. He also rides him around.
Kind of small, isn't he?
Well, I mean, I didn't want to go like ridiculous, because that would be, I mean, I looked up actual Allosaurus like specs.
It's a really light alloy.
Exactly. That's what it is. He's made out of aluminium. Oh.
I thought it was going to be unobtainium.
I couldn't get any. Anyway.
He couldn't obtain it.
So oh, anyway. Yeah, yep. Yeah, that's the joke.
So Aaron will be playing anyway, Captain Obvious in this campaign.
Yeah. So Nibbles was very successful. He was his first combat prototype. So he decided to go and you know, create Warforged for the town. So he basically kind of sealed himself off in a little cave laboratory, started working on his Warforged, and it took him a really long time because he kept having issues because he got cocky because Nibbles was such a success. He thought he could just do anything. But anyway, on his 75th birthday, he finally completed his Warforged prototype. And with Warforged, you have to have somebody to bind to the machine, like a soul or a conscious or something like that. So, you know, excited about what he did, he went to go head to the town to get, you know, a volunteer to bind to the Warforged. And, when he went to leave his little cave, he noticed his, you know, beloved city was on fire and he could hear like screams and shouting and, you know, discharge of the firearms he gave to the militia. So, you know, with that, you know, happening, he was filled with like anger and a desire to protect his town. So he ran back down to where the prototype was sitting, and he decided that he would bind himself to the Warforged. So this human, Elon Musket, bound himself to the Warforged. Took a couple minutes, and he woke up staring at his slumped body against the wall. So he was like, all right, let's do this. He went, picked up his Thunder Cannon prototype that he was going to use for the Warforged, and he set out to the town to kick some ass. And that's just kind of how he's been, kicking ass since then.
I was meaning more of like a physical description.
Oh.
Okay. For episode one.
That concludes episode one. We're done.
Okay. Yeah. Well, he's 6'10", 300 pounds.
Okay.
His skin is like a composite, like metal and wood kind of looking stuff. He's got a two-handed rifle, an energy rifle of some sort. I haven't decided Thunder what the cannon. Specifics are. So, and he's, you know, just kind of walking in with it kind of leaned on his shoulder like a badass.
As you step forward, the two guards immediately cross their pikes.
That's fine.
And they say, no, your invitation.
I reach into I open my belly compartment. I reach into my bag of holding.
And
I produce an invitation.
You pull out this small metallic cylinder that has the same style of geometric patterns of gold and white and silver along the outside as the gates and the walls.
Fancy.
And you hand it over, and the Warforged kind of grabs it from you. He looks at it, twists it, and some of the lines light up, a little almost hologram of you just kind of pops up and kind of does a little spin. And they say, thank you. And they move their pikes out of the way, and you enter this massive courtyard.
Awesome.
Most people don't see the inside of these walls, as the only people who come in are invited by the king. So far the courtyard itself is pretty empty as you were the first one to walk in. You walk in and you just take in the sights and sounds, and immediately you see, you know, you feel people start walking in behind you. So you just fill in.
Yep. Do I need to leave my robotic raptor at the door?
No, you can bring it in with you, and you see other people who have dismounted from their various mounts of different shapes, sizes. Some
sweet.
Most animals. You're one of the few that have a robotic creature. In fact, Warforged are pretty rare. So the one Warforged you saw was probably one out of every 100 people or so. And he kind of gives you a look as you pass through, and he gives you a nod respectively, because as far as you know, no Warforged has ever been invited into the Citadel before.
I give him a nod back. All right. And I'll just have my raptor just follow behind me. He can have his head above mine, just looking around.
All right. And as people begin to file in, the rest of you at different parts of the city, you see a large projection over the center of the city. Of each person that approaches the gates. And so you kind of keep track. Everyone in the city is always looking up, always cheering when they see certain people, if they know them or not. You can tell just because of how they react. So yeah, there's after a few minutes, there's, you know, parade of different people going through, each one carrying a similar cylinder, just, you know, about foot long, just got the gold and white and silver metallic patterns on it. As more and more walk through, another one of you shows up. Charles, you want to go ahead and give me a description of your character?
All right. My character is Max Stormblade, a human paladin.
How many films has he released this year?
38 in the past week.
He's just like a tall, muscular white guy with short black hair and green eyes. And he's wearing full plate armor, and he's riding on the back of a lion, and he's wearing a golden cape with the symbol of Bahamut on it. And he has a shield and a long sword strapped to his back.
Okay. As you're trotting along on your lion, you see a man, he kind of pulls up next to you. He himself, also human. He's got mid-length brown hair. He's got like these two interwoven, almost scarf-looking things, one red, one blue. And he has with one metal gauntlet, he kind of leans over and gets your attention. He's like, hey.
What's up?
He's like, I see the symbol of Bahamut on your back. You really believe all that stuff?
Yeah, I grew up with it, and it's, you know, it's all I've known.
He's like, I've never been for one for the gods, as it were. You really think they're real?
I mean, I feel it in my heart.
Okay. So where are you from? And you guys are just kind of carrying on this conversation as you're trotting forward towards the gates.
Well, I'm from a place called Stone Valley, and you know, that's where I was born and raised. And I, once I completed my paladin training, I went off to, you know, just do good throughout the land. And on a visit one day, when I came back, I found the whole valley destroyed. And the few people that survived told me that it was, you know, Tiamat and her followers. So I'm doing whatever I can to track her down and bring her to justice.
He says, okay. Well, like I said, I've never really been one for them, for the gods. And if you think they're real, why didn't they stop your village from being destroyed?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, looks like, we'll be up soon. We can carry this on later. So my friends actually run a tavern called the Last Resort. It's over on in the bazaar.
All right.
I mean, drinks taste like shit, but the people you'll make more than make up for it. If you're around, huh?
The people you'll make?
I'm sorry, meat more than make up for it.
Dude, you made your new body. Shut up. It's like Build-A-Bear Workshop over there.
So he says, you ever come by and wanna shoot the shit a little bit, you know, buy you a drink.
All right. Sounds great.
And he kind of trots off up ahead of you, and he goes, and you see him turn in his invitation and get accepted. More as you fill into the courtyard, more and more people walk in, and two figures are walking up side by side, and the people around, the applause more or less begin to die down, as some people are met with or meet the two figures with utter confusion. Some almost recoil in disgust. Aaron and Blake, you guys wanted to describe your characters?
What?
Yeah,
my character is a crab man. That is a 6 to 7 feet. Mine specifically is 6'11". And he is a...
It's right there between 6 and 7.
Right between 6
right
and 7.
Between.
Well, he's on the larger end because, you know, he's got a big penis.
Well, they measure height, but
okay. Oh no, I was actually just talking about. I haven't gotten the height down. Yet. I'm just talking about specifically. No, he's 7'8" height wise. No, but anyways, so he's a large crab humanoid. He walks on two. He's bipedal, if you will. He walks on two legs and has two rather long, large arms that end in pincers. And as far as garb, he is he has a, what's the word for it? I have it written down here.
A loincloth.
He has a shiitake. Is a bright blue cloak.
Thank all right, you. For everyone here that doesn't know what a shiitake is.
It's a bright blue, it's a cloak. It's like the traditional, like if you see like a guy doing judo or maybe like a four-year-old doing karate, they're wearing something akin to a shiitake.
Gotcha.
You've seen any samurai movie, that shirt they're wearing, it looks like that.
Pretty sure that's just a type of mushroom.
Yeah, shiitake. Yeah.
Yes, did you just compare a four-year-old to a judo?
I did, actually. Mm.
Sometimes they're one and the same.
Sometimes.
All right, so yeah, giant crab.
Ass kicked.
I'm a giant crab.
You're candy.
I'm atop a rhino. That's right. A large beast of burden, if you will. In this world, anyways. And you might note that along my left side, there is a massive anchor at my waist, and that pretty much that's what you're
gonna say. What was your character's name?
His name is Kibe Tasha Takashi Gani. Who knows? I don't even know what to call this guy. No.
Steve Crabman.
His name is technically the Tasha American spider crab.
Takashi Gani.
Yeah.
Who named him? You were
Aaron. Named him. His name's Kibe.
Kibe.
That's
gotcha.
All you need to
we'll
know.
Just call him Kibe.
Kibe.
All right.
I'm gonna write that down.
All right.
If you know his last name, you've already been pincered a couple times.
And then next to him, riding astride a large white, well manicured goat, is a human of average build with skin that's been darkened by the sun. He has brownish blonde hair that's kept short. He has mutton chops and a wild handlebar mustache. They are separate entities. And he wears a beige shirt with the sleeves rolled up, a well-made lapelled leather vest, and a deep blue ascot with vine patterns on
it. I'm embarrassed that you know what that's called.
He has simple tan breeches held by a leather belt that flow into his tall boots. And atop his head, he wears a jackaroo-styled leather hat. A jackaroo hat is like an Australian Outback-styled hat. It's an Australian style.
Like Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah, like Crocodile Dundee.
Except not as cool.
Yeah, but with an ascot.
Yeah, that's what makes it not as cool.
Like a gay crocodile. Yeah.
Strapped to his back is a large rifle, and he is trotting beside the rhino and the crab man, looking quite diminutive next to such a 7'8". You said,
yeah, he's actually 6'11".
Oh, okay.
Also, the length of his penis, pretty average by crab man standards.
So,
still a solid NBA.
Oh, and his name is Baron von Beauregard. And the sixth.
And from behind you, you hear someone call out, "Baron, is that you?"
A turn. It's like, yes, that's your service.
And pulling up is a half elf on a black and yellow, just this shiny, beautiful machine of a hover bike. And he just vroom, and he pulls up next to you, and he's got like this blonde bowl cut. He's got a cape and like finely gilded clothing, and a large, almost 8-foot, oversized, blocky, overly designed gun resting atop it. And you recognize him as Barnabas Eustace Prescott. Also from your hometown of Gardoon.
Ah.
He's has kind of been a thorn in your family's side. He's from a rival family, but they're more of a nouveau riche, just newly founded money.
Trying to stake their claim.
Right, right. And
can't have that.
You recognize him. His family are also hunters, but they specialize in dragons. And you can tell as he has this finely crafted necklace of dragon scales, and it's almost like just this overly gaudy, huge necklace. And he pulls up, chest out. He's like, "Oh, I see you got invited too, hmm?"
Mm. Barnabas, old fellow, what are you doing with that oversized blunderbuss?
He's like, "Oh, well, I'm hunting actual beasts."
Mm-hmm. Tell me when you fell the great arid worm like my great grandpappy did.
Oh, and he responds.
Has your family made such donations to science?
Everyone kind of gathers around and they're just like oohing and awing as you guys go have this tit for tat back and forth. But eventually he kind of flips his scarf over his shoulder. He says, "We'll see if another Beauregard gets the shaft and doesn't become a Dawnguard." And he just pulls up ahead of you and leaves you. And his words kind of, they kind of leave a sting because almost every generation of Beauregard has been invited to the capital, but none so far have been picked as a Dawnguard.
You should shoot him.
Do it. So at this point, he's pulled away. He's pulled up to the guards. A
crushing blow.
And he hands over his invitation and goes in.
I turn and look at the Baron and I say, "Your village is very flamboyant."
Specifically that part.
Ah, yes. Well, I look forward to meeting more from your hometown.
He prefers to wear paperweights around his neck.
I saw.
Okay, actually, a few blocks away, a little bit further from the hustle and bustle where the crowd has kind of died down, but there's still people celebrating. Two figures standing in between a building, just kind of waiting on a delivery, waiting for someone. Trey and Boyd, you guys want to describe your characters?
All right, I'm Trey O'Neill. I'm playing Flint McShrimpton. I am a nice dwarf druid. His physical appearance is exactly like mine, but a foot shorter.
Which is...
How would you describe that?
He's got a...
Like a leprechaun. Know.
Yeah, exactly.
Full red beard.
Yes, we play with an actual leprechaun.
Full red beard. I've got a little cinnamon sugar hair, you know, quaffed. Not salt and pepper. There's a little red in there.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm wearing my finest shirt. It's a little wrinkled underneath my hide armor.
Does it also have a beer on it?
Huh? Yeah, it does.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Exactly. It's exactly like me.
A deer is a bear with deer antlers.
It's my family crest. And he's already started drinking.
I mean, of course.
Standing next to him is a tall, slender-built half-elf with some drow ancestry or dark elf ancestry, shuffling some cards.
Touching the tar, bro.
You can say that. I've got long silver hair, probably a little bit past my shoulders. My name is Gritz Grindel.
Shrimp Gritz. We have to call this season right here, guys.
Just yeah, we'll just cut it right there and start over.
Everyone strokes out. Game over.
I'm just shuffling a deck of cards impatiently as I'm wearing a nice long deep lavender overcoat covering my studded leather armor. And a rapier at my side.
Okay. You guys have been standing there. You've been waiting for quite a bit now. And you can see the line of heroes has died down. But let's see.
Boyd.
Give me a dexterity saving throw.
First roll of the night.
That would be... Hold on, I have to check. I have a lot of proficiencies now.
I'm not used to having proficiency.
14.
Okay. You hear footsteps approaching, and at the last second, you kind of duck out of the way as a hand reaches to grab your shoulder, and reflexively, the figure jumps back and puts their hand on their the hilt, the dagger at their side, and they're like, "Whoa, whoa, 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 wait! You guys waiting for a package?"
Yeah, we've been waiting for a while.
And then she kind of looks a little, well, you kind of squints a little bit. She's like, "Oh, it's shrimp grits." Okay, she kind of relaxes, and you recognize her. Her name is Karaya. And she's done a few side jobs with the organization that you guys are affiliated with before. And you've just seen her running around. She's a known courier. And so she's like, "Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry I'm late. Ran into some stuff. But I've got
a horn in your
pocket." As the crowd just kind of goes crazy with noises and stuff in the background.
The geese are loose everywhere.
So she's like, "Yeah, sorry I'm late. This was really, really, you know, tough to get a hand on. And you wouldn't imagine all the trouble I've been through just getting."
I'm tired of your excuses. Give me your results.
Right. I mean, I have your package. I just, you know, I had to really put my life on the line. And you could see she's kind of like trying to ask for a little bit before.
I look her in the face and I say, "Results.
Give me an intimidation check."
18.
Okay. She's like, okay. I mean, you know how hard it is for us independents. You know, we got to look out for each other. She pulls out an envelope and hands it over to you. She's like, "But I mean, I don't know what that's for. So I just, you know, just doing my job. Don't shoot the messenger."
All right. In my deck of cards, I'm shuffling. All mm-hmm. of a sudden pull out one. It's got the symbol of our organization on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "There's your tip. Trade that for a favor later."
All right. She pulls it and just, you know, kind of sleight of hands it away. And she's like, "So, do you know what's going on today? What's going on? You know, not with the ceremony, of course, but I heard something big's going down."
"Yeah, we've been picked to do something big, and the organization takes a big step forward today."
She's like, "Oh, it's you guys?
Who else would it be?"
"I mean, I don't know. I was just, you know, I was over on Cargo Street talking to some of my contacts there, and they were hinting at something going down."
Just keep your eyes open. You'll see something great.
"Oh, okay. All right. Well, bye." And she puts her hood up and just darts down the alleyway and disappears into the crowd.
I hate when they involve amateurs in this. I say to him.
Okay. You look into the envelope.
Yeah.
You reach in the envelope and you pull out two of these foot-long metallic cylinders. with the same pattern. It looks like the invitations that everyone else has.
Kind of check them to see if I know they're going to work.
Give me an intelligence check.
Can I check the other one?
Yeah.
I was due for a bad one. Straight intelligence?
Yeah.
6.
Nat 20.
Okay. you manipulate it. You look at it. I mean, it looks completely 100% genuine. You're unable to activate it as you've seen some of the other people up there activate theirs. But from the looks of it, it looks like the real deal.
I hand both of them to Shrimp, and I'm like, "You're the face man. Let's do this."
Okie doke. All right. As you guys head over to the entryway, the two guards, you know, they ask for your invitations.
I hand them to them.
Okay. They check the first one, activate it. And an image arises, spitting perfect image of you,
grits.
And, they're like, "All right," they wave you on. They check the other one, activate it, image, the little hologram shows up, and it shows you, Shrimp, but without a beard.
That's an old photo.
And he like looks at you
And I kind of like put my hand over my mouth just to like, you know, see. Like,
can I minor illusion his beard off?
Sure. You do that. And then the two guards kind of look at each other, just kind of shrug and pull back and let you guys come in.
I'll leave it like that.
Don't know what to do about that. Fix it. Fix it, Grits.
I snap and just drop it.
All right. As you guys enter, you happen to be the last ones in. And they begin closing the gates behind you. And up ahead, you see a few dozen just various characters just standing around this massive courtyard in front of a large stone steps, probably 40, 50 high. At the top of the steps, you see one man that some of you know as Norik the Vindicator. He is the he's the captain of the king's personal guard, and he's pretty well known around the city. He's just been a part of the the royal guard for as long as anyone can remember. On the other side of opposite him, you see a tall man, kind of skinny. He has these kind of gilded robes on. He's got a white bandana tied around his eyes with a gold chain around that. And you know that everyone in the kingdom knows him. That's High Inquisitor Vysis, he's essentially the king's right-hand man, also known as the voice of the king. The king himself doesn't really speak to many people, and kind of speaks through him. And they let everyone know that they just give a long spiel about how special the day it is, how it's tradition that heroes are constantly come forth to defend the realm. And they call forth the remaining Dawn Guard. And up at the front, you see a large Goliath in like gold plated armor. And you see an elven woman. She's got more leather armor, but she has these two light wings that come off her back, and they begin to ascend the steps. And as the High Inquisitor is giving his spiel and everything, he asks everybody to kneel as the king is about to arrive. And you see almost everyone else just begin kneeling and dropping down. Are you guys doing the same or?
Yeah, follow.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. I don't.
Yes, sir.
Well, as we're kneeling, can I take an observation and see who is the guy on the speeder bike? Is he the gaudiest one?
At this point, he's jumped off and it's kind of just like following behind him, wherever he goes. Him and there are a few others dressed pretty fanciful.
Do I know if the king is like a warrior, like he's proven himself in battle? Or is he just kind of like was just king, given the title? Well, I mean, you could be a king and be a complete douche monkey.
Right. That's true.
They're not mutually exclusive.
Nope.
For the most part, you don't know the king as a warrior himself.
Mm-hmm.
He at one point was a hero. Mm-hmm. And the whole tradition of the Dawn Guard was something that was started by him.
So he used to be like Dawn Guard?
Yeah. He was not Dawn Guard. He's actually been the king of this kingdom since it was founded.
So as far
for
as
a
I
couple
know,
hundred years at this point.
So as far as I know, he's not a proven warrior.
No, but you know pretty much all the military, all the other warriors, all the other heroes who have seen battle, they do defer to him. They recognize a power, but he's never actually shown it himself.
I'll make an exception and I'll kneel.
So as that happens, even a High Inquisitor goes to a knee, or Norik goes to a knee, and at the top of the steps, a beam of light shoots up from the ground as if, a hole begins to open, and you see rising up from under the ground, a throne begins to appear, and then sitting on it is a large gold-skinned figure, not fully naked, but he's got like a, almost like a Roman style like waist skirt, and that's pretty much all he's wearing. Bald, pretty like no hair, but like completely golden. He almost kind of looks like
Xerxes.
Not less Xerxes, more Dr. Manhattan, but gold.
Got you.
Yeah. And he just sits there.
I wish I had installed eyelids so I could close my eyes.
Hindsight.
Yeah. As this is happening, you hear a tink, 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 tink. Something drops on the ground near you. Do you react at all? Do you guys?
Yeah, like what is it?
You look over, and it just looks like it's a small dodecahedron.
Can I roll out of the way? I want to roll. I want to get away from it.
Are you just roll out of the way?
Whatever that is, I'm rolling away from it.
Okay, give me a dexterity check.
That's not good. Straight dexterity.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a 13.
Okay.
Yeah, 13.
You roll sideways out of the way. You bump into Shrimp. And you actually also bump into Max, you guys right over there. And you kind of look around. And the people in the immediate vicinity just look over at you like, dude, what are you doing?
I'm going to walk right over to it and just sort of look at. I'm just going to see what it is.
Okay. That he rolled it just looks like a like a an angled like hand piece grenade. Of metal. And it's got like numbers like etched into the sides of it. And you look over and guy's like, oh, hey, can you hand that to me? And you look over and it's a guy in like blue and red scarf wrapped around his head. He's got, you know, brown hair. It's basically the guy he talked to earlier. You recognize it.
All right.
He's like, oh, he's like kneeling like near it. And he's like, can you hand me that?
I say, sure. I pick it up. I say, what cost you a gold?
He's like, I don't have any on me. I didn't bring my wallet.
You don't have any? You don't bring a wallet?
I mean, we're at the ceremony, man. I left everything at the...
You didn't bring, like, your ID or, like...
Yeah, I only needed one ID to get in here. Like, okay.
Fine, whatever. You owe me one.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
So, I'll go back and kneel next to...
His wallet, but he's got some fucking dice.
You see, you see some people surrounding kind of look over and just shaking their heads. And you look up back at where the king has fully arisen from the ground. And you guys see the Inquisitor, High Inquisitor, with his bandana and the gold chain wrapped around his eyes. He's looking up in your direction. But the ceremony then continues. And the king is addressing the two heroes that have come to the front. You know them as Wilhelm the Great and Ziegler, the Angel of Mercy.
She makes bologna.
What?
He's just recounting.
Brandon meat.
That's Ziegler, man.
It's close enough.
he's recounting all their exploits. Vices is recounting all their exploits and to the people. And you guys can see that a large projection is being projected over the citadel.
Is it now?
Yeah. For everyone to see.
Are you sure?
As one does.
As it's coming to an end, the king walks up to Wilhelm, using the massive Goliath and the gold armor, and he kind of leans in and begins to whisper into his ear. And then he moves over and does the same thing to Ziegler. And you can see they both begin to weep. And as he goes and sits back down, give me a perception check.
Uh-oh. 14.
14?
6.
17.
Yeah, you add your perception to it.
I am. 23.
Okay.
12.
Nice.
9.
Okay. All of you except for Shrimp and Max, you guys begin to notice at least two or three people who are kneeling at this point have begun to just start to move suspiciously. Mm-hmm. They start digging into like a bag. One of them begins digging into a bag. Another one is kind of like looking around nervously. And the mass of you, there's only about like two dozen of you, you know, amongst all the mounts and animals that between you. Does anyone do anything?
Do I see, what's the one closest to me? What's the one that's closest to me that I notice is doing something?
Like what is he?
Yeah. Like what is he doing?
Oh,
is he the one looking around or is he digging through a bag?
He's the one kind of looking around, nervously.
Okay.
Everyone either has their heads down or they're paying attention to what's going on up ahead.
I would like to motion to Nibbles.
Okay.
To go,
nibble on him.
Like just kind of like go lord, like look at him, like get up on him and be like to intimidate him to like stop fidgeting around.
Okay.
you know what would really calm this guy down? A robot dinosaur. dude just got a nerve problem because he's meeting the king.
I do have a question because it wasn't really covered in the books. Like, are we connected kind of like a familiar or something like that?
Your
my mechanical servant?
And yeah.
Okay. It didn't really expressly say, so I wasn't sure. So, all right. So I'm just going to tell him, he's like, hey. See what that guy's doing.
And yeah, you guys have wireless, so.
Sweet. Yeah. Got the AC wireless.
I like the idea of just a Cat 5 cable running from one to the other.
So, okay, I'm gonna motion him that I noticed that guy kind of fidgeting around.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, go check him out, see what he's doing.
Okay.
I would like to point this out to my good friend, Kibe.
I'm going to say to you, in Aquan. Yeah. I'm like, I noticed that. Is that normal for these gatherings?
I asked the DM, is that normal for these gatherings?
No.
And I tell him, no.
Are they within earshot of me?
What's that?
Are they within earshot of me?
Yeah.
I activate my helm of comprehend languages so I can hear what they're saying.
All right. It takes a second to calibrate. There's a lot of static, like you're flipping through channels. But then you pick up. Fine. And you understand exactly what they're saying.
How close is
I need to calibrate
the nearest
this thing.
One to us?
Who?
How close is the nearest fidgeter to
the mayor? He's probably about 15 feet away.
I'd like to hop down off of Barnaby, my goat, and make my way to him.
Wait, are you kneeling on top of your goat?
I said I was I was riding him. I want to hop off of him.
Can I insight check the one closest to me?
Oh, that's you're right. Then I guess I wasn't.
Okay, sure.
You say it's like, is this like nervousness of meeting stuff? Or as me being part of what we're part of, do I know there's something about to go down?
Go ahead and roll.
Nat 20.
you've been a part of some of these activities, not the ceremony, but you've been a part of what this person's doing before. It looks like something's about to go down. Like he's reaching into his bag and something's about to happen.
This is going to be bad. Can I walk over and the closest one next to me, can I kneel just right behind him? The closest one that's fidgeting.
Yeah. You go over there and kneel right behind him and
can I make eye contact with one of the guards like
all right, he sees you and he kind of looks over and he just kind of throws his hands up like what?
I kneel right behind the guy and I'm like, I'm fixing to have to kill this person in front of everybody. I usually get paid a lot more for this.
Does Nibbles notice anything to report back?
He just sees that the guy is kind of looking around. He can't really tell what he's doing, but the guy is definitely not paying attention to what's happening up at the front.
Okay. I would like to direct Nibbles to use his massive body and like push against the guy, like push him back into like a corner.
Ooh, it's getting good.
Yeah.
You guys are in the middle. Let me try to paint a picture here. You guys are in the middle of a courtyard. I'm going to put pressure on to make
him back away from
the procession. You're just kind of backing him up.
Yep.
Okay.
Not knowing what's going on, Grit, Shrimp is just one knee down, just like, Grits, what are you doing?
I go back and I'm done kneeling. I go and I stand next to Grits and I whisper in his ear, these jokers are about to pull something. Keep your eyes out and get ready.
And I'm falling behind the Baron as we approach this fidgeter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Very quietly trying to approach this fidgeter. And when we get there, I kneel beside him.
Okay.
And I'm going to move on the other side of him, like obviously in his peripheral, like he could see me.
He can see that he's being
anywhere
surrounded.
Aware of his surroundings.
Right. At this point, the guards all, you guys have caused a lot of stirring, a lot of movement in this crowd of still people. So there's definitely been a number of guards that have started moving towards, I don't know, your guys' side of the mass of people. And the guy that you saw earlier, Max, that you saw earlier in the parade line, he kind of makes his way over towards you. And he says, he kind of whispers, he's like, so, may need a rain check on that drink.
All right.
And he pulls out this little, device in his hand. It's got a light on it and he goes to press it. And as he does, he presses it. Both Shrimp and Grits, you hear this high-pitched whirring sound emanating from the guy that you guys moved up to.
Well, I moved up to him, then moved back to Grit, or to Shrimp.
All right, you don't hear anything. But
I'm okay with not hearing that whirling sound.
The other three, Kibe, Baron, and Elon.
Nibbles.
Nibbles, yeah. You guys hear a high-pitched whirring sound.
Does Nibbles notice that it's emanating from the guy that he's kind of up on?
Yes.
Does he report that to me?
Yeah, you've kind of got a link with him.
Okay.
You kind of shut down your vision a little bit and you like see through his kind of.
I would like to urge him to pounce that guy and get him away from the crowd.
Just before that happens, button's already been pressed. I'm going to need you three to give me dexterity saving throws. You are rolling four Nibbles.
Yep.
Because you're still, well, if you're 15 feet, you were like 15 feet away.
When you say you three, which three
players?
Oh,
I'm sorry. That's Kibe, Baron, and Elon. Nibbles. Yeah.
Nibbles.
Sorry, well, Nibbles? If you're within 15 feet still, so also give me a roll for Elon.
What about Max?
Max? No, you're not within range. You two are going to have to give me dexterity saving throws. Shrimp and Grits. Yeah.
All right. So 12 for Nibbles and 6 for Elon.
18 for Baron.
One sec.
The saving throw?
Yes. what was Elon's?
Elon's was 6.
Okay. And Nibbles was 12?
12.
All right. Anyone else?
20. Mine was a 15.
All right.
Not natural.
All right, so
Shrimp rolled a 1.
Nice. Shrimp jumps into the blast.
He's still looking at me like
Shrimp. At the last second, Shrimp stands up and she's like, "What is that?"
Does anyone else hear that?
At least he didn't shoot it this time.
Your animal ears pick it up. You're like, "What the hell is that?"
At this point, both bodies just explode in a spark of There's reds. There's mostly like this blackish energy that shoots out, and Elon, Nibbles, and Shrimp take
so much damage.
Poor Nibbles.
10 points of necrotic damage.
Gross.
Day one, and Trey's already got the herp.
I'm sorry. That was the halved version. everyone takes 10 points of necrotic damage, 20 points for Shrimp, Elon, and Nibbles.
Mm. What was the save?
13.
Oh, just barely missed it.
Is that right? Everyone rolled over 13, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Explodes immediately. Chaos. There's explosions happening outside the gates. People are running around. Wilhelm jumps up, turns around facing the crowd, and just a giant shield manifests out of his arm. And both the king just calmly walks back over to his chair, and both the High Inquisitor and Nort just take almost like a fighting stance at the top of the steps. Everyone else around you is completely disoriented and just kind of looking around. What are you guys doing?
Was I knocked prone?
No, you were not.
Okay.
I'm assuming the guy that was in front of Nibbler is gone now.
He's gone.
I'll walk up and I tap Shrimp on the back. I was like, get up, you idiot. And I cast Healing Word on him.
Watch your mouth.
I'll call Nibbler back to me. Nibbles.
Not a lot.
Max,
but I'm not.
What are you doing?
Is anyone near me injured?
You do a quick survey. It looks like most people, there are a few people that are hurt. There's like two or three guys that are down and hurt. A couple of the other ones are just blown back and disoriented. And, the guy that was standing next to you, mm-hmm. That you saw press the button.
Yeah.
He takes his necklace, like this large purplish gem in hand, and you hear him say under his voice, "For the void," and he breaks it, and he immediately begins to transform, and he expands in size, and his hair turns white as it grows out, his eyes bulge out, two tusks come out from his bottom lip, his skin begins to turn blue, and in his hand manifests this giant two-handed club with metal rivets throughout. And he immediately begins to just go nuts and start attacking people next to him. I need everyone to roll me initiative.
Hooray!
I was worried this would be boring.
Everyone thought I was crazy. It's like rolling out of the way of shit.
I wanted to look around and see if I saw the Baron's man friend.
Oh, no, give me a perception check.
The Baron. Not very good. Let's see, what's my perception?
I would also like to look for that Patsy as well.
All right, you can give me a perception.
He seemed like he had a lot of gold.
A six.
We don't know him.
I know he had a lot of gold, though.
All right.
Six?
Yeah.
You don't see him.
No.
It's okay. He's of low class.
Does that 21 see him?
21, you do kind of see him
kind
of tucked over, hands over his ears, like on the other side of his bike, his hover bike, just like opposite where the explosions happened. He's just kind of like on the ground, like curled up.
I take note of that in my head.
All right. Everyone's initiative. 25 through 20. Anyone?
I have 20.
Okay.
Not natural. Right. It's just...
15 through 19? Or 15 19. Through 20. What?
I've got 19.
Okay.
17.
15.
All right. And everyone else?
14.
Nibbles has 12.
Okay.
Oh, good. He brought Nibbles.
Did you roll?
Of course I brought Nibbles.
It was also a 6. It was 2 6.
Kibe, what you got?
I got an 8.
Okay. Top of the round, Max. You're the first one there. You watch this transformation right in front of your eyes.
Is he within 10 feet of me?
Yeah, he was right next to you. Now he's standing. He's towering over you. It's like 10 feet tall.
I immediately take a vow of amenity. And I'm like, I will destroy you. I will stop this evil. And as a bonus action, I use my channel divinity to do Valve Amenity, and what that does is I have advantage on attack rolls against it for 1 minute.
Okay.
Until it dies.
Okay.
And you will consistently speak into the mic.
And then with... and I take two attacks against it.
Okay. What you got?
Herpes.
These are some weak rolls. Let's see, where's my... All right, the first attack is a 14.
Okay. You attack and you hit it across its backside, but it doesn't seem to phase it. Like, it doesn't quite cut through its hide.
You spanked it.
I take another swipe at it. 17.
All right, this one, you're able to cut it. What's the damage?
That is 14 damage, slashing.
Okay. All right. He just kind of yells out in pain and like kind of looks over at you as he begins like winding up, almost like in a batter stance. Like he takes a step and begins to wind up his bat.
All right.
Anything else?
That's it.
Elon.
Oh, my turn. I'm going to pull out the Thunder Cannon, and is anybody, do I have a clear shot at him?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For the most part, most people are kind of scrambling away. Mm-hmm. You see a few people kind of standing up and notice that this beast has all of a sudden taken shape in the middle of the crowd.
Okay. I'm going to use my Thunder Cannon with Thundermonger.
Okay.
And I'm going to take a shot at him. Fuck. I don't think an 8 hits, does it?
It does not. I mean, it hits him, but it just kind of bounced off its hide.
Okay.
He looks pretty tough.
Okay. Well, then I'll take my, since the shot went, I'll take my bonus action to reload.
Okay. Shrimp.
And,
oh, sorry. Are you moving anywhere?
I'll move.
Shrimp, you're up next. Be ready.
I'll move a little further away. Is there anything that I can use for cover?
No, right now it's mostly people. All the mounts have started running off in different directions.
Okay.
All the animals, cause you're in an open courtyard and it's just nothing but walls and then the steps up ahead of you.
Okay. Then I'll just, move a little further away.
Okay.
To where I can get a clear shot at him.
Okay. Shrimp, you're up. Grits, you'll be next.
All right. I am going to cast Hold Person.
Okay.
On this jerk face.
Yeah.
DC of 14.
Okay.
Is it a humanoid?
Is it a humanoid? Wait, can I ask that before I cast that?
Yeah. I don't know, can you?
Yet.
Yeah, he looks like a humanoid.
Sure, whatever.
Let me make sure.
I mean, Aaron cast it on a dragon.
Can I make a perception check to see if he's a humanoid?
Well, you tried to, but they
didn't. Not hold person.
Oh, that was Hold Monster. That's right. Never mind.
Yeah, and that was Keith, not me.
Oh. Well, you're useless, Aaron.
Yeah, it works.
All right.
Now, what did I have to roll?
14.
And that is a... What kind of...
Oh, it's a wisdom save. I guess a DC of 14.
Ooh, I rolled a 13 and he gets plus one, so it makes it...
All right. Worth a shot. Good try.
So yeah, you throw your hands forward, you say the magic words, and you see the magic begin to encase him, and he just throws it off, and you see the arcane like shatter in the air.
I say, fair enough, and I turn into a saber-toothed tiger.
Next plan.
Okay.
Plan B, tiger.
You just tiger up. All right, is that it?
Yeah, that's it. I'm gonna stay where I am
at the same distance. Grits, you're up. Baron, you'll be next.
All right.
I
Grits.
Sorry, that goose got me.
the explosions and the monstrous geese outside the walls are causing such a ruckus.
I'd like to use my bonus action. I would like to dash to where the to in front of where the king was.
Mm-hmm.
I yell, "Get the king out of here!" And I turn my back to form up with the others who are like forming a wall between that monster and the king.
Okay.
And then I will, then I say, I'm going to make this a little bit easier for everybody. And I cast Fairy Fire on the monster.
Okay.
What does that do?
Fairy Fire, each object in a 20-foot cube within range is outlined in blue, green, or violet light. My choice. Any creature in the area when the spell is cast is outlined in light if it fails a dexterity saving throw. For the duration, objects and affected creatures shed dim light for 10-foot radius. Any attack roll against the affected creature object has advantage if the attacker can see it. If the creature is affected, it cannot benefit from being invisible.
Okay. What color did you choose?
I would like to go with violet, please.
Okay. So you cast a spell, and now this massive 10-foot, just muscle-bound demon-looking thing. Huh?
You do get a dex save.
I mean, you can just let him go.
All right, he fails. Nope. Rolled a 3, I don't think.
He's not very mobile.
This massive hulking demonoid beast with blue skin just begins to glow in a fiery purple. Very visible. Doesn't help with any of the intimidation factor. It's already looking pretty scary. Do anything else?
No.
Okay.
I stand there, hands out.
As you do that, face. You looked up as you told them to get the king out of there, and you could see the king's throne's already descending beneath the surface. And Wilhelm, with his giant shield, he holds his hand out and just like this massive hammer, just a maul, just kind of grows out of his hand. And you see Ziegler, she kind of waves her hands in the air and a staff appears and they begin descending the steps. At this point, the Inquisitor and Norik are both standing where the king's throne was. They don't look to be they don't look as troubled as everyone else. Like to them, it's almost like they see that things are taken care of.
It's like a Tuesday to them.
Yeah, something like that. Baron, you're up. Nibbles will be next.
Okay.
Nibbles.
So I would like to make a dash to get to a clear shot, like not take the dash action, but just like move my movement speed to get a clear shot at this mm-hmm. beast. And then I would like to pull up my rifle and take a shot at this blue bastard.
Okay. Violet.
Well, his skin is blue.
His skin is blue. The fiery magic surrounding
this
him is violet.
Violety blue bastard.
Also, to be fair, if old Max mm-hmm. Steel or whatever his name was,
yeah,
he's also glowing violet. Unless he can make a dex save. It's every object.
Oh, okay.
Oh, do I need to make that save now or?
Yeah, go ahead and just roll it now. All the NPCs that are nearby made the save.
I rolled an 8.
You also glowing violet.
All NPCs did not.
So I'm going to make a laser blast against this.
Okay. And you have advantage on the attack.
All right.
Because of the fairy fire, right? Like everyone gets advantage?
Yeah.
On
everybody.
Okay.
Everybody. Yeah.
All right. So that would shoot be a 19.
Yeah.
Okay.
It hits. Leave okay. Now. Okay.
You,
great.
You pull your rifle out, and you guys see this just blast of energy fire forth from it.
Pew pew.
And it does 8 damage.
Okay.
Radiant.
Pew pew.
Did you add your sneak attack?
Do I have sneak attack?
Not force.
You said radiant. I thought
we changed that to force.
Oh, it does force damage.
Okay.
And
if you have advantage, you automatically get sneak attack.
Max Steel over here is within 5 feet, right?
No, you have advantage. You have sneak attack
anyway. Oh, and I have advantage.
Anyway,
oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, because
so then I do a D6 of sneak attack.
You're welcome.
So 12.
Okay.
12 nice. Damage, and then I will take my second attack.
All right.
Nice.
And that is going to be I rolled a 16 plus 9, so it hits. and I'm actually going to make this a trip attack. I'm going to use my combat superiority. So it has to make a strength save against, let me see where my 15.
I have to save against that?
Yes.
Strength.
23.
Damn.
Well, he saves against
I mean, you fire at him, shoots him once in the shoulder, the other one shoots him in the other shoulder, and he begins to stumble back, but catches his footing.
I roll damage.
Okay,
so I
don't still hit.
We don't care about your damage.
It still hits, but because I used a superiority die, that does an extra D8.
Okay.
So that's going to be 9. So that does 13.
Okay.
Boom.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Nibbles, are you moving anywhere?
I already moved.
Okay.
Where Nibbles is, does he have a straight shot to the dude, man?
Yeah. He has to leap over a giant bullfrog.
What?
With a saddle? It was someone else rode a bullfrog in there.
Okay, how far does he have to move to just have a straight run at the dude?
Was that bullfrog named Jeremiah?
No. I mean, he could circle around it, not very far, like 10, 15 feet.
Okay, he's... And at that point, would he be at least 30 feet away from him?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to have him move, or he's going to move to where he gets a straight shot.
Okay.
You know, at least 30 feet away.
Yeah.
And he's going to run at the dude man.
Okay.
And he is going to use his claw attack with the intention of using his pounce ability.
Okay.
Does a 18 hit?
It does.
Okay.
And 18 does hit.
18. All right. So that's a D8.
Kibe, you'll be next.
So 8 damage.
Okay.
And he needs to do a strength save to beat DC 13.
He does not.
Then he is knocked prone.
Okay.
And Nibbler will take his bonus bite attack since he's been knocked prone.
Nice.
Let's see. That's a... Wait. Does a 19 hit? Of course it does. Why am I asking?
Oh no, when he's prone, he gets plus 20 AC. I'm just kidding.
That's not how that works.
His AC's like 40.
Yeah,
seriously. Did he grow a turtle shell? All
right. So, Nibble's bite attack does 18 damage.
Wow. Shit. All right.
Yeah, his bite attack is 2d10 plus 4.
Okay.
God.
Yeah. I'll go Nibbles.
Makes what I was going to do kind of irrelevant.
Okay, anything else?
He'll move away 10 feet back.
Okay.
So he can basically line up for another pouncing attack.
As he moves away, the demon is going to take an attack at him.
Isn't it prone?
He's prone.
It uses half of its movement speed to stand
up. No. As an opportunity. Yeah, he has disadvantage on attack rolls.
Okay, got it.
And one was a 19. The other one was a 1.
I would like to use my lucky to reroll that 19.
Oh. What?
Yeah, he had disadvantage.
I had disadvantage.
Was that?
I had disadvantage to attack.
Oh, okay. Never mind then. I was about to say, you're not getting any of this.
All right.
It was not 2 attacks.
yeah, and in an attempt to swipe at him, he just kind of like... twitches a little bit and like flops on the ground. Looks a lot less unintimidating after what he just did. Kibe, you're up.
Remind me again what advantage gives me.
You get to roll 2d20s.
Yeah, you roll 2.
Take the highest.
Go for it.
So bro. I'm just going to...
With a melee attack, if you're taking... Well, if you're... since he's prone, if you're taking a ranged attack against him right now, it would cancel out your advantage.
It would just be normal.
There's fairy fire.
Right.
Yeah, so
it would just cancel out.
Prone gives you disadvantage on range attacks, so it would just cancel each other out.
Yeah. Lame.
Gotcha.
Okay. So you just walk up to him.
By advantage means you can teabag him freely.
And I have, at this point, unclasped my anchor, and he backed
over it. Is that a euphemism?
No, it's not a euphemism. It's my dick.
Hide your kids, hide your wives. They're trapping everybody up here.
We anchoring everybody. And I'm going to take a swing.
So it's the higher one.
Yeah, so it's going to be a... What's that, 13?
13?
Mm-hmm.
You swing at him full force and find nothing but concrete as he's his erratic flopping is just kind of throwing your aim off.
Gotcha. Mm. All right. Well, I'm going to use my second attack. Okay. How about a 18?
That hits.
Word. All right. I'm going to roll a little damage here.
You never saw the anchor coming.
No, we didn't. Let's see. And he's going to take 8 damage. And I'm going to go ahead and actions. I'm going to action surge.
Okay.
And attack again.
Okay.
Because why the heck not? Got my anchor out for good reason. That's going to be a 18.
It hits.
And let's roll a little damage. And we've got 9.
Okay. You come down on it, and with a resounding crunch, it winces in pain. What was the total damage on that?
The first one was it 6 and 9?
Sounds right.
You missed one, hit the next one.
Action surged, and then hit another one.
Yeah, so it was 2 okay. swings. 6 and 9 was what we will say.
All right. As you slam your anchor into it, it kind of...
I think the first one was 8, right?
Yeah, I didn't think hear it was 8, too.
18.
Disregardless of what you hit it for, you slam into it, and it goes limp. It's laying there. Things have quieted down, and its body begins to shrink back... to normal size, back to the humanoid that you saw earlier, as purple smoke rises from it, and the man you saw earlier that initially activated and transformed into that beast just lays there unconscious. And as guards begin to rush in, you hear the leader of them, the one that you were like kind of eyeing earlier, trying to draw his attention. He immediately is like, surround them, surround them. Just the 6 of you. And so they begin to form a circle around you guys.
Can I walk up to him like, whoa, 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 easy. We're here with you.
As you say that, you know, immediately you see a lot of them start drawing their pikes and pointing it at you guys.
I take the tip that's closest to me, whatever the lead guy is. Like, I just kind of like put my finger up. I'm like, hey. No, stop.
As you,
we aren't the bad guys here.
As you finger him,
yeah. As you're fingering his tip, we'll have to end it right there. Yeah, we'll have to call the episode, guys.
Of course, Boyd ends fingering somebody's tip.
I don't want to hear it from you.
That was a perfect ending to the first episode.
So yeah,
this is a new season. My past explorations don't count.
everyone gets a clean slate.
Hooray!
We do have some announcements to make. You want to go ahead?
Yeah, sure. Just an announcement for anyone that follows us on SoundCloud. We're going to be leaving SoundCloud and going to Podbean. This doesn't affect anyone that follows us on iTunes or any other podcatching app that uses iTunes. But we're switching over to Podbean because it's just a better platform for us to use. And so listeners like Blackpaw 360, we're still going to put the latest episode up for you. But if you want to go back to the old episodes, you'll have to go either to iTunes, Podbean, or one of the Podcatcher apps. Mm-hmm. Also, if you'd like to follow Flint McShrimpton on Twitter, you can follow him at Flint McShrimp.
What?
So if you want to keep up with what's going on with Flint McShrimpton, you can do it there.
All right.
I don't even know what that is. Also, a side note from the audio guy, there's going to be 2 recap episodes, at most 2 recap episodes. I actually haven't looked at how long the audio is going to be yet, but basically recapping the entire Iron Bastard saga. That should be up today as well, along with this episode. So check those out so you can have kind of a backstory of what happened in the previous episode or previous saga
before we had
the podcast.
Yeah, before we had the podcast.
And also a special shout out to Vesuvius for the awesome name he gave me for my character. I didn't even think about it, but he was like, hey, you should name it this. I was like, that's awesome. So thanks, Vars.
All right. Do we have any fan mail this episode?
Anything?
Do we have anything pulled up?
I didn't get anything.
I don't think we do.
Just okay. A lot of shout out from our fan that Trey mentioned.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Blackpaw 360, man.
Thanks
for the comments.
That guy's Blackpaw. All sorts of stuff.
Thanks, man.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening.
Yep. Thanks.
All right. Peace out, guys.
Well, we stand here in a row, looking like a bunch of heroes. I know that deep inside, nothing more but a bunch of zeros. Yeah!